Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hey, warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. That's me. I'm so glad you joined me today. I hope your day's been good. Here in the upper Midwest, in Minnesota / St. Paul, Minneapolis / St. Paul, we've got kind of that cold, rainy kind of weather. It's just makes me want a nap, and I want to take more than one. You know, not all naps are created equal, that's for sure. And naps don't play by the rules. If you're like really tired and you think, well, if I take a 90-minute nap, then I'm going to really feel good. And you try to do one of those, and then you're sunk. So I was looking up the different kinds of nap types. There's something called the nano nap. That's a 10 to 20 second nap. That can't be worth anything. But that's like when you just, maybe you're sitting on the bus or the train, or you're just not off for a second. That's like a nano nap. The micro nap is 2 to 5 minutes. And that's supposed to be effective at shedding off sleepiness. Ah, I still want more than that. The next one is a mini nap. That's 5 to 20 minutes. And that's supposed to increase alertness and stamina and motor learning. And then the original power nap, that's 20 minutes. That includes the benefits of the micro and the mini. This makes me laugh. But additionally, improves muscle memory and other, and clears the brain of useless buildup information. I should be doing that 6 times a day. That's what I should be doing. And then the lazy man's nap, which is 50 to 90 minutes. So if you're a napper, I think it's good to nap. I think it does help. Especially if you don't sleep good at night. And I have not been sleeping good at night. Maybe it's the storms lately, the massive amounts of lightning and thunder and pouring rain. And then I wake up and I feel horribly bad for people who are homeless, and I start praying for them, and I start to think of people who are just on the streets and in a situation where they're just not in a good shelter. And then my heart starts to break, and that's probably the Holy Spirit waking me up, saying, you need to get up and pray. You have a comment, Miss Rebecca?
I think that is how it works sometimes. Every once in a while, you have those Samuel moments.
Yeah.
And it's just, okay, middle of the night, the Lord's calling. Sometimes you want to go back to bed, but you can't.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes for the best.
And then I start processing news stories. And here in the Twin Cities, there is an encampment of tents in Minneapolis that's up to 300 people living in it. And I drive by it every night. And I look at it and I think, there's like a little city going on here. And as the weather is getting colder and rainier, and I start to wonder how they're going to get moved and where they're going to go, and just how uncomfortable it might be just being in that kind of situation. And then I start to worry about the animals out there, and I go, God's got that.
Yeah, as long as you're not letting your empathy spiral into anxiety, because that might be what's keeping you up after a little while if you're staying up far too long. That may be something to leave in prayer.
Yeah, I know. And then you wake
up. No judgment here.
Oh, I know.
I'm just saying.
It's a judgment-free zone that I feel like I'm in right now.
Okay, good.
But then you start to go, now I'm getting hungry. Now I might get some breakfast, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm memorizing scripture and reciting it out loud, and I'm going, okay, this is time well spent. This is not time poorly spent. I'm liking this. But then you start to think, I need more sleep. And then you start wondering about the nap. And then on a rainy day, you go, it really is a good day to have a nap, of which I haven't had one. So,
is that a preview for what's about to come in the show?
If people suddenly hear nothing, is Bill not in
a nano nap?
Micro, nano, or mini. That's probably what I'm in the mood for. We have a great show today. My friend Patrick Albanese will be joining us briefly, and we'll look forward to that. And then Jane Daly is going to be with us. She's written a couple books. She won recently an award, which I'm excited to hear about, but she had an adult child. She lost an adult child to cancer, and she's got a story that's so gripping. And if you have walked down that road and you know what it's like, you're going to want to hear Jane's story. And then John and Pam Bloom, they're going to be with us this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to that. It's always enjoyable. John is a co-founder of DesiringGod.org, and he's a regular columnist there. And the man's got wisdom, that I promise, and his wife Pam is every bit as wise, so it's going to be a great show. So thank you for tuning in. You know I love Scripture, and I always want as many people telling and reciting Scripture on the show as possible. So if you have a verse, a favorite verse, maybe you have a verse you've memorized, and you say, I want to get my verse on Bill's show, all you have to do is call 877-933-2484, and then get into our voicemail and say, hey, I want to leave a verse for Bill's show. And you can say your name or not, and you can say the verse and just read it, and read it like you mean it, and we'll put it on the air. I know my friend George Fraser was in the studio a couple weeks ago, and I said, hey, George, give me a verse. And he said, okay, so here it is.
My favorite verse, this is George Fraser from Real Recovery, and it's John 10:10, and it says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And for me, what that's about, Billy, is that Jesus came to give us true life, and that our recovery is going to be better than our using, that our life with Christ is better than anything that Satan offers. And he tempts us with money, power, greed, sex, chemicals, that this is the right way, the fun way, the worldly way to live, and it only leads to death. But the Son of Man comes to give us eternal life that starts now, and it's abundantly better than anything we could ever imagine or hope for. And that's why this is my favorite verse.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
I feel good whenever I get a chance to speak to Patrick Albany. He's my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We try to talk about news of the day, things that are going on in the media and the entertainment world. We try to cover it all. Hello, Patrick. How are you today?
I'm well. I see that you showed up for Take Yourself to Work Day.
I did. I figured someone has to do it. Might as well be me.
Yeah. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. And neither of us, I believe, watched the Emmys. So that was part of why it was the worst ratings they've had, I think, in history.
You know, I don't know if this has been your experience. Not only did I not watch the Emmys, I didn't even know that I missed not watching them.
Yeah.
You know, I almost wish I would have TiVo'd them so I could deliberately not watch them. I go, you know that? Can you even call that a boycott? I didn't know they were on.
I know. So, and they've gotten political, as you would expect, once again.
I'm going to throw this out there that they might have had some things about Judge Kavanaugh. You know, they're topical, and I'm sure they don't like Trump, and it's Hollywood. And
right.
We know what you think.
Yeah, you're pretty predictable.
Now entertaining me. Yes.
Yeah. It's like you never want to tell your mom on a summer day at 10:30 that you're bored, because she'll tell you to clean the garage.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure grandma and grandpa have some things to do.
Yeah.
They dangle money and you say, yeah, that's very attractive.
Yeah.
I like dangling money.
I do too. I'm a big fan of dangling money.
Big fan of the dangling money. My grandpa used to dangle the money.
Who did?
Grandpa.
He would
dangle two crisp $1 bills and then he'd hand me a lawn bag and say, fill those with weeds. One of these will be yours.
Thank you, grandpa.
Taught me the value of not coming over saying you got any tasks, you know, Because, boy, they always did. They always had something.
Yeah.
And going to my grandma and grandpa's, they lived just two blocks away, so you could walk right over there, cutting through the yards. You'd get there in a minute or two. And it was always a mixed blessing because they always had that that glass jar of butterscotch candies sitting on the living room table.
Mm-hmm.
But then they would also, and I wish I were kidding, fire up some stewed prunes.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
Grandpa would just sit, he'd chomp down. These are good. These will keep you regular. Put hair on your chest. Everything to my grandpa, put hair on your chest. Eat breadcrumbs. Put hair on your chest. Anything you didn't want to do, he would say, you should do that because it'll put hair on your chest.
Oh, gosh, that's funny.
You know, you're 9 years old.
That was that era, wasn't it?
Yeah, you go, I'm 9. I don't know if I want hair on my chest.
Not yet.
Is that something I'm going to want?
Oh, gosh, that's so funny.
You know something? My son is 8 years old, and I cannot on the air say what he said an 8-year-old girl said to him the other day.
Okay.
Because she didn't like something that he said, and she called him a name, and I said, well, this tolerance, no bullying thing is working out really well.
Yeah.
My 8-year-old son is kind of devastated. This is what she called me, Dad. What?
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a little bullying going on in second grade.
Yeah. I mean, it's no bullying zone signs everywhere, and it's evidently it doesn't work because we as human beings are flawed creatures, and we tend to have to navigate interpersonal relationships with each other. And, you know, I don't know if you have any of these things in your past from third grade, fourth grade. You say, I wasn't very nice to that girl.
Oh, sure. I do for sure have that in my past.
Well, kiss that Supreme Court seat. Goodbye.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
I know. You didn't want it anyway. But
sour grapes.
So you go, well, how did you navigate through that? How come, you know, your parents told you stuff like that wasn't nice to say? You have sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And you had fights with sisters. And you learned how to navigate these relationships and say, well, I got to let some stuff go. And sometimes I'm wrong. And I have to own up to it. And then we all get along.
Mm. Yeah. Patrick Albanese is my guest. I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, more with him in just a minute. You're listening to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'll be right back. After the show, I have my friend and colleague Patrick Albanese on from prestigious West Des Moines. And Patrick, I'm just looking at the way in which traffic in the Twin Cities is now feels like miniature LA. Doesn't matter where I go, it's always 40 minutes. What do you have in Des Moines?
Nothing.
Oh, gosh, that's so nice.
You know, I was the television traffic reporter here. There was a woman that had the job and she got a job at another station. So I just walked into the station and said, you guys don't have a traffic reporter. I'll do it. And the news director said, you have any idea what you're doing? I said, nope, but that's never stopped me before. So they gave me the job and I said, till you figure out what you're going to do. That took a year. And I used to laugh. I would do it on air. I'd say, well, again, my job is an oxymoron, Des Moines traffic. You know, it's funny because I used to live in Los Angeles, and I think, you know, the weatherman here has a tough job because the weather here changes every 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to rain. Iowa is the only place where a 100% chance of rain means maybe. And they'll tell you that. They go 100% chance, but it might not. I don't – where'd the 100 come from? I know how – I went to school. Do you guys do weather on extra credit? I'm not entirely sure how this works.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, traffic here is nearly non-existent. It's not bad at all. And L.A. was, of course, the opposite. The weather guy had nothing to do. He sat there on his iPad, and the traffic guy's going, oh, my gosh, it's out of control. And sometimes just to make it seem more harrowing, I would do traffic times in percentages. And so instead of saying, ooh, you know, your 10-minute drive is going to take 12 minutes, I would just say, oh, It's like you drive to downtown is going to take about 20% longer. And doesn't it just sound worse?
Oh, it does sound way worse. You're evil.
Wait, sense? Well, I was trying to justify the paycheck.
Of course you were. Of course you were.
It only took him about a year to say, why do we have a traffic guy?
I know. It's like the weatherman that says, it's 70 degrees today, but it feels like 71. Like, what are you trying to qualify yourself?
Hey, you're messing with my mind a little bit there.
Yeah. So a lot's been said at the U.S. Open. I know we've talked about this off air about Serena Williams. And, you know, they said that if Serena was a man, they would have called her a fiery competitor. And that always makes me curious as to who's they and why do sports writers get to speak for all of us? I would call her, from a competitive standpoint, a crusher, an annihilator, a phenomenon. So why do sports writers get all the power?
One
of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah.
Why did they call her hysterical?
Well, I don't know if you have watched the tape. You say, that's a bit over the top.
Sure.
But I've seen people go over the top. And I don't know. You know, and okay, so let's say it's true. Let's say that people overwhelmingly use the word hysterical when referring to a woman losing it, for lack of a better term. And for a man losing it, well, they don't exactly say, well, there's some ungentlemanly behavior.
Right.
You know, they've got some choice words for that, too. So are we really going to start to say, well, you know, this word is used way too much on disproportionately for women over men? See, I don't care. I don't want to do these battles. These are not only are these hills I don't want to die on, I don't want to be on. I don't want to be on these hills.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to get, you know, kind of silly with the minutia that we tend to fight over.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I agree, Patrick, and I think she is absolutely a legend in the sport, maybe one of the greatest athletes of all time. And she is kind of in the autumn of her career at 36, and she lost to 16, 17 years younger than her. So I can see the frustration. She's not at her prime. She's been beaten by Naomi Osaka before, and she doesn't like it. She's a winner. She doesn't like losing. Who does?
But she was Naomi Osaka. You know,
yeah, she was. 18
years ago. You know, as a teenager, she's coming up in the ranks, and people saying, hide.
Right.
Because if you play with her, you're going to lose, and it will be an embarrassing defeat. I think I was reading something because the difference between like a high speed men's ace serve, I guess you would call it an ace serve. I don't know who had the record. It was like Sampras or somebody had some record for a speed. And really, I think Serena was the only female athlete that came close to duplicating the speed of a man's serve.
Mm-hmm.
It's some massive speed.
Yeah.
So she was that person. She was, you know, 16 coming up through the ranks and knocking off people that were 10, 15 years older than her. And they said, who is this kid? And it's sad when things end, you know.
Yeah,
and I don't have that experience because we never really got to that level of excellence anywhere.
Yeah. So the storm in the Southeast has touched you personally. Talk about what is going on with your brother-in-law.
Well, he was by sheer coincidence, he was in intensive care in a South Carolina hospital where he could not be moved. And he had a lot of tubes sticking out of him. So they evacuated every hospital in the area. The hospital he was in, they said, this one's the newest one, so it should do okay with the floods. And they had three patients there, and doctors moved in, and they survived it, and he got out of intensive care, and everything's fine. Although he said to me, "There's, you know, you got to watch out for the looting." And this is weird to me. People are looting the dollar store as if that stuff's all that expensive. I mean, isn't it just easier to go in and buy the stuff?
Well, do you really sell it on eBay for 90 cents and make a profit.
That's true, but it just strikes me. You're looting a dollar store. They don't have anything in there worth taking. That's why it's a dollar.
Yeah, the looting is crazy. It's it's always so sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to the Alfa Romeo store. That's where I'm going.
And start looting there? You shouldn't be saying you're going to be looting at all on Christian radio, just so you know.
I understand that. This is a big hypothetical.
Okay. I can deal with that.
I have done no looting in my life. I don't know. I can't say how I would act if I was in a flood and somebody said, you see that there? That's the James Bond car. And it's running.
Let me wrap up with James 1:19. It says, therefore, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to take offense. Wouldn't that be nice if everyone started living that way, especially when they were on their keyboards in their basement?
Yeah. You have just described the complete opposite of the Twitter platform.
Oh, I'm sure.
they took that Bible verse and said, okay, if this would be good for those people, then that's probably what brings you peace. How do we get people to click on us?
Yeah.
Do everything the opposite.
Yeah.
It's to work beautifully.
Patrick, always fun talking to you. Thanks for coming on to the big show, and I will talk to you again soon. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Yep, Patrick Albanese has been my guest, my friend, colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll take a short break and be back with lots more in just a minute.
Thank you so much for your generous support. Because of your gifts, God is at work through the Faith Radio programs. We recently heard from one faithful listener.
I was really impacted by the sermon about the sower and the reaper and how we should have confidence in going out and sharing the gospel. It's exciting to think about, and I really appreciated that message.
Do you have a story to share about Faith Radio? We'd love to hear from you. Call our Faith Line at 877-933-2484.
It is 27 minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold, with you today. Thank you for listening. Always so grateful. Thank you so much for supporting Faith Radio. We got a great conversation coming up next with Jane Daly. She's written a couple of books and won some big awards. She's written a book called Because of Grace. It's a mother's journey from grief to hope, and it's pretty gripping. She said in her book, we disconnected our television. We listened to only Christian music. We didn't go to any movie rated higher than PG. We faithfully tithed 10% of our meager income, attended church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. I sang in the choir. We led youth group. I got up at 5:30 every morning to read my Bible and pray before the kids got up. I did all these things, yet my teenage son got cancer. How could this be? Overwhelmed by my own pain and watching my son getting more sick from chemo, my husband and I stopped attending church. We felt shunned by those believers whose faith was stronger. We were outcasts. Despite our prayers, tithes, worship, and service, our son was ill. We must have unconfessed sin in our life. Our church body didn't know how to respond to our pain. No one called to see why we weren't in church, not even the pastor. A lot of pain that goes on when you have difficult life circumstances. Jane's going to talk about that in such a gentle, loving way. There's so much grace in the conversation coming up next with Jane Daly. And then in hour two, John and Pam Bloom will be in studio. And if you know, if you've heard them in the past, they're an absolute delight to have in studio. We'll oftentimes open up the phone lines. And because we just finished a season of Share, we're going to be praying for people. We had a lot of prayer requests of people who are suffering some pretty serious things. And we want to open up the phone lines and pray for you this afternoon. That's all in the second hour. It's all ahead on Afternoons with Bill Arnold. That's me. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Afternoons with Bill Arnold, the most popular show on Faith Radio in the afternoon. That's what I'm going to go with, unless I'm told otherwise. We have Jane Daly with us on our studio line. Awfully glad to speak to her again. We talked to her a couple months ago. She has written a couple of books. I think both have won awards. One book is called The Caregiving Season, and that's when you're caring for a loved one, an aging parent. And she's also written a book called Because of Grace, A Mother's Journey from Grief to Hope. She's back with us. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, I was reading a piece of your book, Because of Grace, and it's a page-turner.
Thank you. It's really, it's the most devastating loss that a parent can have is a loss of a child, no matter if it's a premature miscarriage, or, you know, like my son at the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Or last year, we lost my brother. My brother was 65, and my 94-year-old mother was devastated. It's just not, it's not the natural order of things.
Yeah. When Bobby was 30, do I have that right?
Yes.
Yes. And then when did he first develop his first bout with cancer?
His first bout was when he was 17.
Okay.
He was diagnosed with Hodgkin's, and Hodgkin's is very highly treatable. They caught it early, and he did chemo and radiation, and that pretty much knocked it out. So we were really thankful that the doctors got on it right away as soon as it was discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was completely clean until he was 29 and started to have some health issues and discovered that he had cancer again.
Mm. Jane, I am so sorry you lost your son.
Thank you.
That is so tough. And your journey with your husband, I mean, maybe you would be willing to talk about the supreme highs and lows. I mean, you're on a roller coaster that, I mean, it's all-consuming. Isn't it the first thing you think of when you get up and then the last thing when you lay your head on the pillow?
It is one of those, it's one of those things where you, I don't know, it's like when you're a kid and you wake up on Christmas morning, you have that anticipation that something really special is going to happen that day. And sometimes as an adult, we experience the same thing when we have a job interview or when we know we're going to get an award or something where you wake up with that anticipation. It's exactly the opposite when you have a child who is sick, is you wake up every day and the first thing you think of is, oh, there's that. That is overwhelming. Maybe I just don't want to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to bed at night, it's the same thing. Instead of lying and thinking about the highs of the day, the lows of the day. I don't know if I do that. I lie in bed and I say a nice prayer. Thank you, Lord, that this happened and this happened. Instead, you lie down and think, oh my gosh, is my child going to be alive tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
How much longer do we have to go through this?
Mm-hmm. And I was reading in a preview prior to bringing you on the line, an excerpt from your book about just how well you were doing life. I mean, you were doing all the right things. You continued to take the next right step. So how is it that doing all the right things, you could be in the situation where your 17-year-old son has cancer? Even to the point where you said, I can't even be at church because I must have some unconfessed sin. We must have done something which brought this on, and I don't even feel like I can go to church because there's people better than me. And then you weren't hearing from people when you weren't there and you didn't get a call from anyone, including the pastor. The whole thing just feels painful.
Yes. And I can look back and appreciate that time because it helped grow my faith. As odd as that sounds, I knew that going through that, I wasn't going to be able to rely on what other people thought, what other people's judgments were, and really coming through that, I had a crisis of faith at that time. And knowing that I'd gone through that, then this next time when Bobby was diagnosed again, I had already built that muscle. I'd already been through it and knew if my faith wasn't going to be shaken then, well, my faith was shaken, but it wasn't destroyed. This was not going to destroy me. I'm going to be okay because no matter what, God's in control and he knows what he's doing and I don't like it, but God is good.
So, Jane, would you say in this life that kids can represent possibly one of the greatest joys possible and also one of the greatest pains possible? I mean, if you're a grandma now, that joy is probably the grandkids. So it's probably not your kids anymore. But, I mean, you talk about feeling vulnerable.
Well, you feel like, as a parent, my job is to protect my children. That is my job. My job is to make sure that nothing bad happens to them. You don't want them to be taken advantage of by a predator, an abuser, you know, nothing. You don't want them to be bullied. And so your job, and you feed them well, you clothe them, you know, put a roof over their head because that's your job. And then you find something that comes in that you have no control over. And it makes you wonder as a parent, did I do something wrong? Did I miss something?
Mm.
Did I forget to pray one day? And that one day I forgot to pray, the devil got in and he snatched my child. And, you know, going through that, realizing that's not how it works at all. There are things that are really out of our control. Well, there are a lot of things that are out of our control, Bill, as we know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's one of them. You know, no matter how hard we try to protect our kids, things are going to happen. And we have to know that God is going to help me grow through it. He's going to help my child go through it. I mean, I experienced seeing Bobby go through, maybe not the first time because he was 17, and that's a really difficult thing when you have cancer at 17. But
mm-hmm.
at 29, totally different outlook. He told me many times, Mom, I want quality of life. I mean, yeah, quality, not quantity. He said, I'm okay with having this death sentence. I just want to live this last year of my life the best that I can because I know where I'm going.
Mm. So Bobby's this mature man of God, so I'm just getting tears in my eyes right now.
Oh, he was an amazing kid. And that's something I've talked with other parents who've lost a child. And so many people want to say, well, you know, how did he die? How did he die? And you want to say, no, ask me how he lived.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to ask me what he was like. You know, let me tell you how adorable he was or you know, even how much he was a pain in the neck. I don't know, but, you know, if that's not the important part. The important part isn't the end of his life, but all the moments in between.
Mm-hmm. So, Jane, when you put this book out, and I know that you want to help others. I know you want to get at a place where you can help shoulder some burden and share some experience and offer hope. This is a loss that does last forever. So you're probably trying to best manage the pain the rest of your life. Is that fair?
That is fair. Yeah, Bill, I would say that because there's always that that person in the photograph that's not there. And when the family gets together and you have your family picture and we're all sitting around the dinner table, there's somebody missing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that loss of, gee, I wonder what he would be like now. I wonder what he would look like. I wonder if our relationship would be better, worse. You know, what would he have kids? You know, just all of those things that you don't get to experience.
Mm-hmm. When they say time heals wounds, I don't know if I really buy that. I mean, I know it probably dulls a little bit and desensitizes a little, but, you know, you wonder, you know, 10 years from now, what it would be like. And you're always wondering. You miss some more, I would think, but
I would say that there is a certain anesthetization that happens over the passage of time. It's not the sharp, of loss, like, you know, the stabbing of my heart when I think of him. It's dull. It's more of a dull, oh, that's right. I wish he was here. I would love to. He would get a kick out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of that, oh, I'm getting, you know, my heart is just so hurt and I'm going to crawl in the corner and die.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have a friend, a really good friend who's in my writing group who lost her son just over a year ago. And she shared with me, she goes, I'm still struggling with this. I just don't know what to do. And I said, it's only been a little over a year. Give yourself time. And she goes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Jane, I want to hear what kind of business you did with God and what were some of the things you started to understand more about God through this process, losing Bobby?
I'm going to go to the second time. Let me start. Back the first time when he had cancer was one of those, a very difficult time in our lives, not in our marriage, because our marriage didn't suffer. We had made a commitment, okay, Bobby's sick, we're going to stick together as a family. But my husband lost his job, and I had to cut down. Actually, I had to take a leave of absence because I needed to take him to chemotherapy every day. So my husband was trying to work a part-time job, and so we had financial issues. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis during that time, so I was in a tremendous amount of pain. And it just seemed like our world was falling apart. We were getting calls from bill collectors, and it was a nightmare. And I just thought, God, you have forgotten me. Was I ever your child? Because why would this be happening to me if I've done all the right things? I've, you know, prayed all the right prayers. I read my Bible. I go to church. I've been a good Christian. Why is this happening? And I never got like an answer that said, well, this is the reason why. All I know is that a really good friend couple came alongside us during the time and just walked us through to the other side. And that made a huge difference. They were the only ones who shouldered the burden with us. Even though they'd not ever lost a child, didn't have a job loss, they carried us with them. They offered my husband a job. He started being able to work full time and, you know, just pulled ourselves out of it and started going to a different church that was very, very supportive, unlike the one we had gone to previously, mm-hmm. where it was like, what's wrong with you? How come your son is sick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't believe in that. So that built that muscle up. So the next time that Bobby was diagnosed, it seemed like everything else kind of crashed around us again. We had, Mike got laid off, I got laid off, Bobby was diagnosed, my dad died, we got sued, and so we were just, everyone, you know, our friends were saying, okay, Job, when are you going to curse God and die?
mm-hmm.
And we were like, we can't, we've already been through this. We know the end of the story. We know how this turns out. So we're not going to let this circumstance or all of these circumstances dictate where our faith is, because where else are we going to go? Kind of like Job, I'm not going to curse God and die because why would I do that?
Yeah.
So it's you know, going, walking through those really hard times and knowing that there's a light, not only at the end of the tunnel, but the light through the tunnel. And my consolation during that, this whole time, was Psalm 23, and I just repeated it. The valley of the shadow of death. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Death is only a shadow. It is not the darkness. It is a shadow. We're only here for a short period of time, and then we have eternity.
Mm-hmm. Jane, I want to take a short break, but I would also like to open up the phone lines. If there's somebody that is needs to talk to you right now, maybe because of the experience you've had losing Bobby, you can invite our listeners in a way that only you could. What would you say to our listeners if they wanted to call? What question would you like to ask them?
How are they dealing with their child's sickness or death?
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
There you go.
That would be great, Bill.
There's Jane's question. How are you dealing with your child's sickness or death? 877-933-2484. You will be in the most loving arms. Give us a call, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back with Jane Daly in just a minute. Welcome back. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. My guest, Jane Daly, has written a book called Because of Grace, A Mother's Journey from Grief to Hope. And Jane, I'm going to bring on a couple of callers, just open up the love lines and let you love on them. My first guest is Julius, who lives in Manchester, Connecticut. Hello, Julius.
Hi, Bill. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for calling, and welcome. You have a comment or a question for Jane?
Well, it's more of a comment and a question. My daughter died when she was 17 days old. And during that time, I was working in Washington, D.C. at one of the college campuses as a police officer. So I had to take care of other people during the day and live in the hospital at night. Fortunately, I did have a church that surrounded me, and they loved on me. But once you leave that, it's very difficult for someone that's a first responder that's used to being protected to open up like that. So do you have any suggestions or any thing that you could give the first responders that may be going through this right now that are listening?
Great question, Julius. Jane?
First responders who are trying to care for other people and then also care for a child. Is that your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was on the day watch going to work every day, and then at night I went straight to. Is it okay if I say the hospital that my child was at?
I believe that's all right. Yes.
Okay, Children's Hospital National Medical Center. And it's hard to make the transition to being able to make sure that everyone else is okay, not knowing what's going to happen to you, and then at the same time having that extra burden of having a child that I literally didn't know was going to wake up the next day.
I think I understand. Jane, are you seeing what he's giving himself all day as a first responder, and then he goes to the hospital at night with a child, not sure if that child will ever die? So I think he's looking for, I think maybe some counsel or wisdom as to how to be in that situation.
I can't even imagine, Julius, how difficult that must have been for you, because your natural instinct as a first responder, as a police officer, is to take care of people, to protect. And yet you can't protect your daughter. The only thing you can do is to come alongside and comfort her. So I think that for those people who are in those types of businesses or that type of employment where you're taking care of people, it's very important to make sure that someone is there to take care of you.
I appreciate Julius, and I'm so sorry about your daughter. God bless you.
Yeah, God bless.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah. Another caller on the line from Blaine, Minnesota. Renee. Hello, Renee. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I just wanted to share 3 years ago, this last September 10th, I lost my son, and he had just turned 15, and he was hit and killed in a hit and run, and it was devastating. We also found out who had done it and found out that he had just left a bar, and I've been going through the legal process for the last 3 years, pretty much. It's almost like salt, you know, in a wound, because you're unable to heal because there's still this ongoing stuff going on. But I've seen the Lord walk me through this. One of the prayers that I pray is, I still have a younger son who is, missing his older brother.
Hello.
I say, Lord, give Antonio a kiss from me and Bobby. And then I tell him, picture God chasing Antonio down. And giving him a kiss. And that usually gets a smile out of him and me. And I've just seen the Lord walk me through this. And I was so just happy that you said, this is a shadow. It's not going to last forever. And I say, Antonio's going to be one of the first people to meet and greet me when it's my turn to go home.
Oh, that makes me cry, because I feel the same way, is that I know that Bobby will be there, and my mom just passed away a couple of months ago, and I just pictured Bobby seeing my mom and saying, Grandma, you're here, and it makes my heart glad to know. I'm glad you have that comfort, Renee, because it is that it's devastating having to go through all of the legal stuff because you just feel like there's no end. Is it ever going to end? Can we just get closure? Can we just move on and deal with my grief, you know? So God bless you for that picture. Thank you.
It's just beautiful, Renee. God bless you. It's so sweet. So sweet, isn't it, Jane?
Oh, it is. That's beautiful.
Yeah, we don't grieve as those without hope, do we?
No, we do not. And that's the beautiful thing, that the most important thing as parents we can instill in our children is a love for the Lord, so that we know that should something happen to them, however old they are, that they're going to go be with the Lord and we will see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something, Bill, that I want to make sure that I bring up that was really important to me, is that all I could think of was, I just want to go, I can't wait to go to heaven because I'm going to see Bobby. I can't wait to go to heaven so I can see my son. And one day the Lord spoke to me so clearly, and he goes, when you get to heaven, you're going to see my son. And that's the most important thing. And that has stuck with me for all these 8 years, is that truly it isn't about going to heaven to see Bobby. That's just a plus, because I'm not going to know him as my son.
Right.
I'm going to know him as a fellow brother. But the most important thing is I'm going to go to heaven to see Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about seeing loved ones when you get to heaven, and I'm thinking, I want to spend the first 17 trillion years just looking at Jesus.
Right. Yeah, the other is just...
Then I'm happy to connect with others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the grieving process... Jane, it's so varied. It's like your fingerprint. It's no two stories are the same, are they?
No, they're not. Mm-mm.
And as we try to be as honoring as we can to everyone's story, we have to be always mindful of the fact that people are going to grieve differently, and that we just always have to be honoring and respectful wherever they're at, even if we don't understand it.
And some people grieve longer. I mean, like... I still grieve, but I don't grieve like I did that first year. But other people grieve, you know, 3-4 years, and we have to give them the space to say, it's okay, you can still grieve.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have, you know, there's not a point where we can say, okay, you're done.
Right.
You've grieved enough. Now it's getting weird.
Right.
We can't do that.
So if we do have a friend grieving, is it good just to come alongside them? And I mean, is there anything we can do that would be counterproductive, or we should try to avoid in our helping and supporting someone who's grieving?
Let me start with something that I think is really important. If you have a good friend whose child died, make a note of that date.
Yes.
As they're coming up on the first anniversary, text them, send them a card, send them a Facebook message that says, I'm thinking about you. I know this is difficult, because mm-hmm. that first anniversary is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Just to acknowledge that I remember this. This is an important date for you, and I remember this. Things that you don't want to say is, he or she is in a better place. No, they're not. You don't feel that way. Please don't ask should you have let them go out that night, you know, because they got hit by a car,
mm-hmm.
just please, no condemnation.
Mm-hmm.
Just come alongside. If you don't know what to say, just give me a hug and let me lay my head on your shoulder. And that's the most important thing you can do for me.
Yeah. Jane, I've had a knot in my throat the whole 30 minutes, but it's been great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you having me, Bill.
Yeah, no, it's great having you on the show. Jane Daly's been my guest. Her book, the couple of books she's written, the one we've talked about today is Because of Grace, A Mother's Journey from Grief to Hope. JaneDaly.com, D-A-L-Y, JaneDaly.com. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.